December 4th, 2023, it's a Watt for Pedro show.
The main thing was trying to just see how things were, you know, see how we have a guy here who plays all together different, you know. You say, well, that's so-and-so, I know him anywhere. Then you hear something else, say, well, that's so-and-so, but he's, yeah, I know him anyway. And then you sit down and maybe you can try to see where they both came from, you know, and you find maybe they came out of the same tree somewhere along the line. And, you know, so when I start looking at jazz like that, too, you know, at it collectively, looking at the whole thing.
Defense of mine, but her thing.
Walk for Pedro show. Happy Monday. Start off John Coltrane. Talk to August Bloom on June 15, 1958, about his idea of jazz. Then the Babylon Dance Band with my friend Roger. Because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me Tara and Tim from Antietam. Welcome aboard.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having us on the show.
Okay, right away I got to make respect and credit to Wolf Knapp for the connect, correct?
Yep.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay. Tara, bring your earliest musical recollection, please.
Well, radio has been insanely important to me, and it's like a lot of people my age. It's weird. You know, it's under the covers listening to Sugar Shack by Jimmy Gilmer and the Fireballs. I distinctly remember that. It's so funny to me that so many people my age are listening to the transistor under the radio, you know, under the covers, like it's a furtive maneuver or something. But that seems to be a common thread.
And this pad you grew up, was there any musical instruments?
There were not musical instruments in my home, except my dad played harmonica, and that was it.
Did you jump on that harp?
I didn't jump on the harp, but he heard me one night playing my silverware along to the Beverly Hillbillies theme song, and that made him go out and get me a guitar for some reason instead of a drum kit.
Well, let me ask you, school, were you in the choir, the marching band?
No, but the first thing I did on a musical instrument in public was I was supposed to play the triangle in the school band on the night that Kennedy was assassinated. And so that never got rescheduled, and we were already at the school, and all the parents and everybody got super bummed out. And so I never got to play that triangle then. But that was it. I was more the freak in high school who wore a three-piece suit to school and took my banjo and carried a cane, and I made my own music at school sitting outside.
What was the first record you bought with your own money, Tara?
First record, Summer in the City, Love and Spoonful, in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. First time I was away from home, and same purchase, same store, was also a Davy Crockett coonskin cap.
What was the first gig you saw?
First gig, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, 72, the pre-Tarkus tour.
And why did your pop want to get you a guitar?
He thought that I had talent because he heard me play in my silverware, but also I'd been taking some piano lessons at school, and so they knew I was a little tuned into that.
Oh,
and,
so you were doing music at school?
Yeah, at about like sixth grade or so, I don't even remember my teacher, but I took piano through school, and I had this recital at the big music store downtown by some, I don't know, national accreditation thing. And it was cool because I was super, I was like the most shy, most kind of hard to pull out of my shell kid you can imagine. But when I did that and played the piano for that recital, it kind of gave me a taste of like, oh, okay, this could be a superpower, you know?
Now, there's no piano at home, so you only play when you were at school?
Yeah. Eventually we got one when I was a little bit older, but not from the get-go.
You got that guitar first?
I got the guitar first, yeah. Actually,
okay.
I did. Yeah.
So now let me learn about how you learned it. Was it on your own, or did you go to a teacher? Did you have lessons?
No, I learned it on my own. I just played along to my favorite songs. I had like a Mel Bay book, but I did it totally on my own. I mean, which is why now, you know, if somebody like presses me on a certain, you know, progression or like certain, like, you know, kind of like, you know, real musical like setup, you know, I have a hard time kind of dealing with that because I've been totally taught by myself, like using sonics and, you know, my own maneuvers, you know, so it's hard for me to sit down and play like a blues progression or something.
Autodidact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
So let me ask you this, not graduating, but after school in the afternoon, did you get into the basement band, bedroom band, garage band thing?
I was like writing songs by myself. Like another thing to know is that I got diagnosed with scoliosis when I was in like junior year of high school. So all of a sudden I went from being a pretty like, you know, physically active kid, like, you know, doing sports and stuff, to like being in my bedroom in a body cast. And so that's where I really went deep with the guitar. And I started recording myself with two two cassette players.
For 2 years,
yeah. And, like, I recorded myself bouncing tracks on cassette players and did my own tunes, like, you know, we're talking 15, 16.
We're also talking Woman Alone, so it's not really with your buddies. This is you on your own.
Just me, yeah. I never played with another person.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at, because a lot of people I've had on the show have a phase in their life. It's usually during junior high or high school, and they're playing with their buddies. Yeah, usually it's a drummer's parents' pad, right, because they don't have to set up and tear up that shit. So that's why I asked that.
Yeah,
so
it wasn't that
you're writing
for me.
Songs. Let me ask you, what was the first, can you remember what was the first song you wrote for yourself?
Well, me, yeah, it was the Friends and Lovers Suite. It was on.
It was not just a tune, it was a fucking suite.
It was a suite, it was like a book. I mean, I don't have the cassette.
No, like, you know, the first published, William Shakespeare writes a huge-ass poem with no mistakes. Rape of Lucretia? No, that's the second one. It's Adonis and Venus
and
Adonis.
It's weepy shit, man. I'll tell you.
Yeah, you know, I'm just putting it out there just for the sake of discussion. Because, you know, music is a trippy thing. It's, to me, it's a pretty near a lifeline. Especially, like, I got maybe hip the listeners to scoliosis. People, it's a curvature of the spine thing.
Yeah, right.
And it's genetic, and it's something that you just got to get through because you're born with it. Like my fucked up knees,
Yeah, but you know what? Being in that situation, being in that situation taught me, like, kind of like to embrace being an outsider or being out of the mainstream, and it was pretty important for what was to come, and I got comfortable with that positioning.
Yeah, sure. No, what might seem, you know, like a farmer would tell you, if you want a good crop, use a lot of manure.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So sometimes you get dealt a hand, you got to play it the best you can. And getting taught empathy, especially at a young age, I think is kind of a gift, even though it's a fucking hell and a challenge. So your first tune was a lover's suite.
Friends and Lovers.
Friends and Lovers.
Yes.
There's a difference. Yeah, okay. And was it a long tune?
It was a four-part tune. I think that I've got the cassette. I think it runs like about, we're going to call it 11 minutes or so.
Yeah, so it actually was a suite. And when you say you were using two machines, you're bouncing back and forth so you could overdub and do sound on sound Les Paul style. Okay.
Yeah, Mary I got Ford. Super obsessed with that early on.
Yeah, but that's great. I mean, musicians recording themselves now is a lot more commonplace than more older days. Really interesting. And but this was just you for you. You weren't doing this in public yet.
No, I wasn't doing it in public. I played it for a few friends, but that was it.
No, do you remember your first performance Woman Alone, or was it in a band?
Very, very first performance, I played banjo in a pickup band at the state PTA convention in 76. But my first real gig was like Derby Days in 1978. I was in the first punk band in Kentucky, and we were in Louisville, and we were at
Kentucky,
Louisville.
That's a huge claim, because Richard Hell is from Kentucky.
I know, but he wasn't making music in Kentucky. And so
you're right. He had to do it in New York City, but
exactly.
He moved there and actually got there via Delaware. That's where he meets Tom Miller. But, he goes there to be a poet, but he ends up inventing punk rock. Yeah.
And, you know, we were familiar.
And you guys, we're talking more Louisville than Richard Hell's Lexington.
Lexington, correct. Yeah. Yeah, so, but Louisville and Lexington were
I know from playing both. I know from playing both towns, they are completely different worlds, especially that KU blue. I can't see Richard Hell fitting in with that either.
Oh, God, no.
What was the club?
Yes, you do pick up on the difference between the two towns.
Yeah, what was the club? Rockledge or something like that?
Rockledge,
it had a weird fucking name. Yeah, Rockledge or something.
Yeah.
But Louisville and Derby, and I played three or four Derby. Yeah, you don't go on until 2 or 3 in the morning. Yeah, just completely different everything.
Yeah. But we had lots of fans in Lexington when we started playing. You know, I was in my first band was called No Fun. We were painters, and
No Fun. Did you like Stooges?
The person that named the band did, yes. I joined just a little bit after they started jamming together.
Yeah.
But it is the first time I played with other people. The other guitar player in the band, one of the other guitar players in the band, Tony Pinotti, was a painter, and we would go out on painting breaks and jam on our acoustics on Neil Young songs from the Neil Young songbook. So then when Tony and Bruce Witsup made the band, like about 4 days before I joined it, Tony asked me to come and jam with them because we had been playing together. And, I mean, it was absolutely cataclysmic to play with other people and to, like, helix like that and shit.
You mean in 4 days they had one of their guys already quit?
No, they just added me.
Oh, they just added you, okay.
Because we were all painters there, and we would have sessions. That's when I heard, like, a lot of music at the time, because we would bring in records and share and have all-night painting sessions.
Oh, yeah, so yeah. Also, probably you had buddies passing around mixtapes, right, cassettes?
Not yet.
Before mixtapes, really. Because that was big over here, the cassette, you know, you turn people on, because a lot of these records weren't out there, so... You know, it's all about people, friends, hip and friends to stuff. There's a guy, Bowling Green. What was his name? God, he ended up living in New Orleans. Yeah, and he sang like Richard Hell.
Huh.
What am I thinking of? He's got like a three-name. Great cat.
I'll think on that.
Bowling Green, and then ends up in New Orleans.
No, not my friend.
I had the bass player on my show. Couple of years ago, yeah, it'll come to me. But
are you talking about Government Cheese?
No, it was a dude's name.
Oh, and, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a three name, and you know, senior moment. Sorry. Look, let's play some music. You gave me this stomp.
Yeah, stomp.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. be so fucking wrong. You never knew a single thing all along. Someone tell you what you think. Stop yourself before you sing. You really feel like it's this way. Well, should be enough for you to say what you gotta say. I can't do this any other way. Say what you gotta say. In line. You never want to take what's yours or give me mine. Or what if you gave it all away? Well, it should be enough for you to say what you gotta say. I can't do this any other way. Say what you gotta say. Well, it should be enough for you to say what you got.
Show that chunk of music start off with Tatum doing Stomp, Crossing Bridges. After that, Never Left I See, Ron Coates, brand new out of Brighton, England. The Weather Is Coming Down, Position Normal, last tune on their new album, Dirty Dumplings Done Dirt Cheap. Take the K out of punk rock, you got pun rock, right? Post Homo Hubris for Jazz with Side 7 excerpt, MSSV. I just did a big tour with them. Say what you got to say. The Bobby Lees with Radiator. Phi Sarum with When the Sun Does Shine. 100 Flowers, which used to be Urinals, right? And then, yeah, they changed their name to get more gigs. It didn't work. Yeah, they're Urinals again. Right? Maybe they're 100 Flowers again. Maybe they changed again. Anyway, let's not. And finally, Orange Song from Antietam. So, Tim, your turn, please. Earliest musical recollection?
Well, it's probably singing in church, but it all goes back to my father, who was born in Dixon, Tennessee, and grew up in Nashville, playing the violin. In 1929, when he was 12, he fiddled on the Saturday Night Barn Dance, which was the predecessor of the Grand Ole Opry. But country music wasn't really his thing. In the 30s, he had a dance band or a dance orchestra that he led on the violin with tuxedos and music stands and all that. So our house was
maybe kind of Western swing, huh? Bob Wills or Milton Brown?
Well, I mean, probably more like Tommy Dorsey and, you know, real pop music in the 30s.
Swing.
Playing all kinds of dances.
Yeah, but, you know, I just read this Charlie Christian bio, and they're talking about Oklahoma and Texas Panhandle. And, yeah, the stigma of the fiddle or the violin, like, right, a violin's a fiddle on your arm instead of your fucking chin, right?
Yeah.
Because Botsky played the viola, and he called it, because he played it on his arm, he played the fedola. called it.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was this stigma. We're talking big city people like New York or Chicago. Oh, you're hillbilly if you use that instrument. And it was just jive because, you know, music is music, especially jazz. People were improvising across the board. And, yeah, they wanted people dancing too, but it didn't mean the musicians couldn't have fun. So that's your earliest memory is music in the house. Now, there must have been a fiddle, a violin, right? He played. Did he let you play it?
I started playing the piano in second grade.
Was a piano? Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have to go through the ordeal of the piano lesson? Now, we didn't talk about this with Tara, but I've had people on my show almost quit music because of this ordeal. And I don't really think it's the idea of the lessons. I think it's that some cats aren't cut out to be teachers.
Yeah.
Well, I had a good teacher, and, like, my parents were very cool. They didn't pressure us to do anything, but my sisters were really good oboe and flute players. But we all started on the piano. And then I took up the cello in fourth grade, and I was in a string quartet in fifth grade.
You were in the school band.
I mean, I was in the orchestra at school through junior high.
Well, I asked that because, you know, a lot of schools actually got rid of the music program. You know, Flea told me he started that Silver Lake Conservatory because he went back to Fairfax High and they got rid of the program where he learned trumpet.
Really?
Wow.
Okay, yeah. That bullshit you're talking. Yeah, these guys, it's kind of like not a necessity, right? Arts are like...
But
that's one reason why I asked that. And also, everybody's got a trippy path how they got today. So,
yeah, but you know what? The thing about education, music, and schools and stuff is somebody might pick up something and never be in a band or never take it any further. But when you make music with people, you learn how to communicate with people and read people and empathize with people. And that's the important lesson in it.
There's one of them. I mean, I think there's several. But you got to take that up with these individual school boards because they're the motherfuckers who decide this bullshit. Obviously, not all schools because Tim was in a quartet at his school. So your first gig in front of people was part of this quartet.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I had a great teacher, Louise Harris, who was in the Louisville Orchestra, no relation to me. And then, but I gave, by the time I got to high school, I gave up the cello to play basketball, and I got cut from the team. I wasn't that good. So, you know, when my friends and I were sitting around and we started a punk rock band, I was like, well, I'll play the bass because I can play a four-stringed instrument. And then, you know, after that, I was basically self-taught.
You mean you're talking about cello being four-stringed?
Yeah, I mean...
It's four-string, but the big difference, right? It's tuned in fifths, so a little more drama between the strings.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. First record you bought, Tim, with your own money?
I think it's Paul Revere and the Raiders' Greatest Hits.
And what about first gig you saw?
You'll laugh at this, but it was a pretty great gig. In junior high school, I went to see Chicago right after they dropped the name Chicago Transit Authority. So it was an early band with Terry Kath as sort of a badass guitar player and introducing. It was really good, you know, before they got cheesier.
Yeah, man, he was 14, he was telling me. I was not allowed to go to a concert at 14. That's pretty
good. I was 14 when I saw my first gig. Me and D. Boone saw T-Rex.
Oh, damn.
Oh, yeah. And Tara and I went to a lot of the same concerts before we knew each other, including Bowie, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Jethro Tull, a bunch of stuff like that.
Okay, now this band that you're asked to join, you had to get a bass, right? You didn't have one. So how'd that happen?
We kind of bought all of our instruments at the Guitar Emporium, but Jimmy Brown ran in Louisville really
good. Yeah, I was on Bartstown Road. I remember that.
Yeah.
I think he was a really nice teacher because he let me work in the store to get my first guitar and amp, and he taught me how to maintain my gear and stuff.
I think he had a big painting of Eddie Cochran on the side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he sold guitars to everybody, you know. In rock, and I played a Gibson short scale at first, and in our early days of the Babylon Dance Band, I played with this big pick and just dug a big hole in the thing, and I mean, we used to all bleed at our early gigs for a good while.
Mike, did you ever use new skin on your fingers if you started bleeding during a gig?
No, not with bass, but Ed from Ohio used it. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, December 4th, 2023, edition WAP Pedro Show. Special guest, Tara, Tim, hold tight for hour two. December 4th, 2023, it's the second hour of WAP from Pedro Show.
off on a distant light. I got a feeling it ain't right. 18 miles from who knows where.
Pedro show start off the second hour. Tyre Key doing Long Trail. Then we had Oakland Afternoon Ensemble with Elegy Number One. And Morbid Beauty after that with I Watch Humanity Disappear. Infinite River with Summer Session Number Four. Anti-Industry with Spelling. Paul Watson, The Slow Blood. And then Antietam with Hands Down. Okay, so, Tim, I heard you mention Babylon Dance Band, which was the first tune I played by you guys on the show. So this is before Antietam, right? This is before You Know Tara, maybe.
Well, that's right. I mean, we started right after Tara's band, No Fun, and she joined our band. The guys in No Fun moved to New York, started the band Circle X, and she joined the Babylon Dance Band, so she was in it after the first few gigs. And we played in Louisville for approximately 5 years, like 78 to 83, before we moved to New York and started Antietam with Wolf and Mike, who were also from Louisville. But the dance band was in that first generation of Louisville bands, and it was a pretty amazing time. Like, we couldn't really get gigs in bars or clubs at the time. So, you know, our first gig was in a barn. Second one was an art gallery. We played things like the women's prison, a teenage pregnancy school, which was one of the greatest gigs ever. We played a punk rock set at like 10 in the morning for all pregnant girls.
Girl went into labor.
We played a German beer hall where Wolf saw us for the first time. The St. Matthew's Potato Festival. And it was, you know, it was pretty great. Like you were saying, Louisville was a place where there was a lot of originality. A lot of really good bands popped up. We started writing originals really quickly, but we also mined the 60s to do punk rock versions of a bunch of really good covers, like we did Shake, Quick Joey Small, Talk Talk, 2+2=? By Bob Seger,
SOS,
Can't Control Myself by the Troggs, Little Bit of Soul, It's All Right. The only one we did that was really kind of in our genre was we did Real Cool Time by the Stooges, but mostly we kind of transformed more bubblegum and soul songs into our punk rock style.
Yeah, so you're not talking about Intim, you're talking about Babylon Dance Band.
Yeah, BDB, yeah.
And you were asked to join this band.
Yeah, I was. I was like,
well,
I
not
didn't
you, Tara, want... but I mean Tim too.
Oh, I was a founding member with.
You're a founding member, but of you had to learn bass for it. Okay.
That's right. Mark Zockham knew how to play guitar. Chip just started singing, and I played the bass. And then we had a succession of drummers, and then Tara joined, and we had two guitar players.
When it came to writing your own songs for Babylon Dance Band, how'd that go?
You know, it went different ways. At first, Mark or I would come up either with a bass riff or something on guitar. After about a year in that band, Mark left and Tara became the only guitar player. And so then we really wrote by, we would jam sometimes to my bass riffs, sometimes to something she did. And like that song My Friend Roger that you played was written off by bass riff. And but things, you know, came together pretty organically. And we just, we'd play, you know, it was so great in those days because we would play every day. And
we would play every day, and then we would in rehearsal and a lot of times go and shoot hoops after rehearsal every day, you know.
But practice wasn't just practice, it was also writing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, I mean, that was the beginning of something in Louisville that was really special. We were in that first generation, but then, you know, through the, from then until the early 90s, you had like the End Tables, Wolf's Band, Your Food, the Dick Brains, Malignant Growth, Squirrel Bait, Slint, Rodan, and, you know, Will Oldham, Tara Jane O'Neill, King Horse, Brett Ralph, like just a bunch of really great music.
Okay, we're going to get to Antietam. Let's play some more.
Oh,
for Pedro Shine Chunk, Music Star of the Antietam, doing Stowaway. Then More. It's More with three R's, people. No fucking E. These Wide Eyes. Noisuka. Every Day, parentheses, parking meter. Ray Shin, out of Reno with It's In Your Head. Finally, Antietam, 1-2-1. So the story Antietam, I heard you mention, Tim. The band kind of got started when you left. I know we've been talking a lot about my Louisville, but you leave there for New York City.
Yeah. We in the dance band, we had gotten, a guy had written an article about the Louisville punk scene, and we got gigs in New York City and had been driving up there for a few years. And, you know, we've been playing Nashville, Cincinnati, Lexington a lot, and some touring. And so when the band sort of fell apart, Tara and I moved up to Hoboken, and then Mike and Wolf joined us, and we formed Antietam in 1984. And our first gig was at CBGB's. We played with a Human Switchboard, who had Bernie Worrell sitting in at that time, which was super cool. And, you know, we met you shortly after that. And one of the things I wanted to mention that was so amazing was Dee said to me and Tara outside Maxwell, said, "You're not really good Southerners naming your band after the Northern name for the battle." And we were just like stunned and so impressed by that, because we were big into history and reading and stuff.
Yeah, Sharpsburg. You know, we had visited that battlefield, that tour.
It was just
a fucking coincidence. Yeah, you know, because of touring and shit.
Oh, really?
We would have to stop at every Revolutionary and Civil War battlefield that was on the route. D. Boone would always, and I was into it, you know, but D. Boone loved history.
Yeah.
And I should tell the listeners, the convention kind of is the North named the battlefields after kind of the river.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The South names it after the town. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, on the one hand, it's like a terrible band name, because we've been printed many times as Anti-M, but also Anti-Dam. You know, nobody ever knows how to spell it, to say it, or what it is, which is really the sort of moral reckoning for America. It's the battle in the Civil War that was so bad that they...
Yeah, it's the worst afternoon. The most people killed in afternoon. Mr. Lincoln does the Emancipation Proclamation right after it.
That, it was like, okay, this is about slavery. You know, people were trying to pretend in the first year of the war that it could just be...
Oh, shit, they're still trying to pretend that some fucking state right.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's a guy named... He's got a great name, Bone Kemper, you know, and he wrote this book. He went and analyzed the fucking, you know, documents the CSA had, and it was all this kind of power in the federal government. It wasn't about state rights. Bunch of fucking liars.
You know? Yeah.
But I'm glad you see, so I think D. Boone was drawn to you because maybe kindred spirits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of interest sort of in reading and history and everything, you know, it was pretty interesting in Louisville. Our punk rock scene Chip, who was really, really smart and a great writer, once said he was in a room with all these punk rockers, and he was the only one who had not read The Charterhouse of Parma by Stendhal.
No, that was the idea. Same thing our scene here in Hollywood, you know. Oh, a bunch of idiots. But no, just kind of awkward people. If you talk to them, they were deep.
Yeah.
We're at the end of the second hour. They just couldn't fit in with Square John's. You know? December 4, 2023 edition, Wap Pedro Show with Tim and Tara of Antietam. Hold on tight for hour three. December 4, 2023, it's the third hour. What? Pedro Show.
It's eyes closed. Behold. 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 Saturn risen in my room. Saturn incarnate. Human, but not quite. Never could he flee. A chimera, the flesh. My shoes are ripped to shreds. My knees. My sweet little Luke. Always chewing my shoe. Let me be clear here. I am nobody. I am nobody. I am nobody. Not compared to you. Not compared to you.
Watch for Pedro show during the third hour. Antietam doing Needle It in the Eye. Then we had Brendan Etter Ensemble, Overgrown Garden, Platy Pop with Putty Karma. P-U-D-D-Y. Putty? Putty? I don't know the fuck. Pengo with Doorway to the Sky. I think it was the name of a video game, right? Pengo. And then finally, Antietam. Clarion. Clarion Call of Antietam. Now, Antietam always had two bass players. Was that your call, Tim?
Well, it started that way with me and Wolf, and it was really just because we both played bass. I mean, it wasn't really an idea like maybe in Dose or Delta 5, you know, and like a lot of the time one of us played a second guitar, but we had this one song like Extra Dry where one of us played a signature in 6 and one of us played something in 8, and then like every 24 it lined up. And, you know, it was just, it was pretty wild music. Like, we had no preconceptions about it. And,
you know, two bass goes before Dose. I mean, Duke Ellington did it. John Coltrane did it. Live in Seattle, there's Don Garrett.
It was really cool. But then, you know, we did two albums, and we just re-released those two albums, remastered them, and put them out on Bandcamp. And,
So you mean you just wanted a four-piece? And like, sometimes there'd be two basses, but sometimes it'd be actually two guitars, a bass and a drum.
I mean, it was just more that we made the band because we, you know, we wanted to make, the four of us wanted to make music together. I mean, Mike and, I forget whether Wolf told you about them leaving Louisville under duress because they destroyed our punk house during a Super Bowl Sunday, you know, uproar. And so they were literally fleeing town because the landlord was after them, and they went up to Vermont, and then we kept in touch. And it's just more that the four of us wanted to jam together. Okay, how are we going to do this? Well, you both play bass, you know. So it was more about, you know, getting together and making something that we thought the four of us could make than any other concept about it. And then one of them would default to guitar sometimes.
After our first two albums, Wolf went to jazz school, and, you know, he had...
He ends up on, like, 6-string bass, right?
Yeah.
And after that, we became a 3-piece, and Josh, our drummer, joined us in 1990 when he was underage, and he's been with us ever since, so it's been the three of us for the...
So it was only the two bass thing for as far as Wolf was in. That was only the first two records.
Yeah, that's that right. Was it.
Okay. I want to play here Bird Watching.
Thank you. watch out now. Take care, beware of falling swingers dropping all around you. The pain that often mingles in your fingertips. Inside your head, the hopelessness around you in the dead of night. Beware of sadness, it can hit you. It can hurt you, make you sore, and what is more, that is not what you are here for. Watch out now, take care, beware of soft shoe shufflers. Dancing down the sidewalk as each unconscious sufferer wanders aimlessly. Beware of
show. Last music for this edition started that chunk off with Antietam doing Birdwatch. Then the 1164s with Big Time Television. Damon Smith, Pandelis, Karyogas, Mr. Cook, Moon X with She Light, Where the Fireworks Are from Julie Christensen. And finally, this is Antietam with Will Oldham and Todd Brasher doing Beware Darkness. So, for a while, Antietam was on hold.
Well, it's funny. That was the perception just because we didn't release an album. And we were, like, really busy during that time. I mean,
but,
part of it...
Well, okay. Out before that, okay. Right after Wolf left, for the first half of the 90s, we did, like, three records on Triple X in L.A. We did another one for Homestead. We did Terrace 2 solo records. We did a Babylon Dance Band reunion record. So we put out all these records, and then... between like 95 and 2004, we didn't put out another Antietam record.
Right.
But we did a lot of things. We recorded and produced a Terrakee Rick Rizzo instrumental record in 2000. Tara played on a bunch of stuff like 11th Dream Day, Drag City All-Stars. We did singles, compilations. We recorded one record that we never released, because we didn't finish it. And, but then, so some people thought we kind of reemerged in 2004, but we've done six records since then.
Part of it, too, was during that time, we just started, in particular, I got really interested in jamming with other people and kind of broadening that, opening that up, because I really, before that time, it was kind of like being in a platoon for me. It's just like my band is my platoon, we're moving through life as a unit. And so then I kind of started opening myself up with the solo records of jamming with like my amazing friends who are all players and meeting other people that weren't my friends that became my friends. And we were all doing a little bit of that kind of. Tim was playing with a band called the Special Pillow here in town.
Playing the cello.
Josh went on a tour with Codeine. We played with Sid Straw for a little while. So it was really a cool time out in a sense for the band, and that we were all kind of growing. And then when we made the next record in 2004, Victory Park for Carrot Top, we were like kind of coming to a reset point. Really enriched, and since then, collaborating with other people and being open to that has been really important to us.
Yeah, now 2004 is still 19 years ago.
That's true. So we did.
So it ain't like a little bit, right?
It's so crazy.
Well, in 2008, we did a triple vinyl record, and another one in 2011. Then what? 2017 or.
Yeah. We started putting out our own records with IOI in 2017, and we've done so since then.
So a record comes out when you want it. There's no nobody.
Kinda,
nobody
yeah.
In
I mean, it yeah. seems to this point have been on about a 4 or 5 year cycle. I'm kind of wanting to change that now and be a little bit more, a little bit more in the moment. And so, for example, we're going to be putting out an EP like in the early spring, and then that I kind of intend that to be maybe part of a series of EPs, just like little blurts and bulletins, instead of holding up for this like monolithic thing that happens twice a decade.
And usually with that kind of cycle monolithic thing, there comes a tour with it, and a lot of these releases didn't have tours that went with it.
Right.
Well, what about the future? You guys plan on taking this to live situations?
I mean, we did tours, like in 2004, we toured the country with Yola Tango and on a tour on our own. We did some gigs by the 2008 and 2011 records. But I don't know. I mean, we would love to. Josh, our drummer had the music store in New York, Other Music, for 21 years, and then that went out of business in 2016, and
I'll put it to you this way: we would love to do it, and I intend to try.
Let's talk about this EP. That's the next Antietam release, right? Coming in the spring.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm working on just finishing it up right now.
Okay. And how do you think this is different than like when Wolf was in the band, or the 2004 pivot point, or? What is 2023 Antietam like looking backward? It's probably looking forward, right?
Yeah. We kind of got a new sound on this record.
Tell me about it.
Well, for one thing, I think there's of the four songs, one's more of a classic, growling guitar Antietam song. The other three, in some cases, I'm plugging straight into an amp or I'm playing acoustic guitar, and those are the tracks, and there's no solos. We have some friends, horn player, vibe player on one of the tracks. So, in a way, it's Antietam of late in that we are collaborating with people and there's a lot of sounds there. And I'm, working really hard to make crafted records, which is, love to do that and the mix and everything. But my guitar playing right now is interesting. I'd say that I'm on this EP, I'm putting down kind of like curtains of sound rather than fists of sound, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And you know what? I'm going to invite you right now when that EP comes out in the spring. Come back on the show. We can play and talk about it. And you probably got some songs that, you know, especially a triple album. You can give me some other songs to flesh out. Because there's a lot of Antietam to explore, and I'd love to have you back on. You into that, Tim and Tara?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. I love it. That, you know, for some people, music's one little point in their life. Other people, it's a lifelong endeavor, and what you guys are doing is very inspiring for me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
And Mike, I want to tell you, I read Dante's Inferno on the beach in Italy this summer.
Okay, just Inferno, no Purgatorio.
Just the Inferno. Okay. Had all the local characters right nearby.
You know, he said something about, you know, I didn't put the hell part to scare people. The heaven part was supposed to make it more attractive.
Yeah.
A lot of people think, and you know, if you read the fucking Nick Tosh's book, it's a big revenge get back thing. Okay. But anyway, I'm glad you did. Which beach was it?
We were at Sperlonga on Sperlonga. Near Rome.
Okay, by Roma. Okay, great. Anyway, I can't wait to have you back on the show again, okay?
Thank you so much. Deal.
Beautiful. People, it's been December 4th, 2023 edition. Wapito, you keep your power dry.